This is Jonathan Armstrong. I'm speaking to you live from the UK, and with me is my colleague from Duane Morris, Eric Sinrod. Eric.
This is Eric Sinrod in a very sunny San Francisco. I'm looking out my window at the bay, and I see a cruise ship, and I'm wondering why I'm at my desk and not on the ship. But be that as may, I'm here with Jonathan to deliver Tech Law 10 to you this week.
And you're here to talk about e-discovery, Eric. What could be better than talking about e-discovery? There's been some case over in Pennsylvania, I think, this week.
Yes, federal district court in Pennsylvania. And let me sort of set the stage a little bit here. Generally speaking, the costs of discovery in the United States are such that each party bears the freight of their own efforts to produce discovery. And so when one side, for example, demands of the other side documents or the production of electronic information, the producing party has to incur the cost. And, you know, in this new e-discovery world, those costs can get fairly phenomenal fairly quickly, depending on the case. Electronic discovery costs can include harvesting information from networks, from hard drives, from laptops, from PDAs, restoring backup tapes and getting the information there, providing information from voicemail messages. I mean, the list goes on and on. And in a relatively large case where there's some sophisticated issues, the production is monumental and expensive. Every once in a while, a party can go to the court and say, look, what's being demanded of us? The probative value of that information is so outweighed from the burden that the requesting side should pay the freight. And occasionally judges will honor that, but normally not. So you're normally saddled with your own costs in producing information, which is not enjoyable for clients, especially in the David and Goliath type cases where you have a single individual bringing a major case against a large company. You can imagine the large company might have quite a lot of responsive information to produce, and there isn't some sort of tit-for-tat where they can go back to the individual and say, well, you need to do the same, and then they can pare it down because the individual simply just won't have that many electronic records. All right, so that's the stage that's been set. And then along comes this case from the Eastern District of Pennsylvania called Race Tires America versus Hoosier Racing Tire Corporation. And in that case, the court held that the electronic discovery costs at issue were tantamount to normal copying costs, which can be awardable, generally speaking, in routine litigation in the United States. So, for example, if you and I had a lawsuit against one another, Jonathan, and I prevailed, mm-hmm. which of course I would, you know that. I say that tongue-in-cheek, Jonathan's a formidable adversary. But let's assume hypothetically and correctly that I would prevail, then as part of that, I could normally get as part of the judgment an award of costs, which traditionally includes just, you know, routine photocopying and those yeah. types of costs, which, you know, can add up, but they don't normally measure up to the type of thing we see now with electronic discovery costs. But in this particular case, the court found that the e-discovery costs of harvesting the information and copying it was the same as routine costs, and therefore they were awardable. The court was careful to say this was a unique situation, but it's movement in a certain direction. And it'll be interesting to see, Jonathan, whether over time other judges take this hint and essentially tuck into routine awards of costs, electronic discovery expenses. Because if so, then if there's an understanding that the prevailing party will get to recover electronic discovery costs, it makes parties think pretty carefully before they embark on litigation, you know, the yeah. merits of their claims. Because I know in the UK, for example, it's just the general rule that the winning party obtains their attorney's fees paid. In our country, it's the opposite. Each side pays their own attorney's fees unless a statute shifts it or unless there's a contract that shifts it. And now, potentially, there could be this situation where electronic discovery costs go to the prevailing party, and those costs are severe and significant, and parties would have to think through their claims very carefully before they proceed to litigation.
It isn't just loose change either. I mean, the award, I think, was for $360,000, I think you were telling me, Eric, which I think by my arithmetic is around about £225,000 or €250,000 ballpark. So this isn't to be sneezed at, is it? I mean, presumably this is fairly routine for e-discovery costs to be at that type of level?
Well, e-discovery costs easily can be in the six figures in real litigation cases, absolutely.
Yeah, but the rule here, as you rightly say, is that generally speaking, across most of Europe, we have much less e-discovery, but the loser does pay in litigation. So if I were to sue you in the UK, where obviously, because it's my home forum, I'd win, you'd be paying my costs then, Eric. But e-discovery is unlikely to be a great part of that, certainly not likely to be in the $360,000 level, because we don't love those fishing expeditions that you indulge in there. And the courts over the years, even those courts where we have discovery, like the UK, have tried to narrow the type of documents that you can ask for, the type of documents that you can demand from the other party. And of course, some jurisdictions in Europe just don't really have discovery as we know it at all, certainly not pre-action discovery.
Well, you're correct. I mean, so, in the United States, the standards for relevance are very broadly construed. So the wide ambit, the fishing net you can put around information that you can seek is very broad, and many judges don't understand how vast the electronic information can be. So a judge will simply say, look, this looks relevant to the case. You must produce it. And that's where the expense comes.
Yeah, so how senior is this court then, this Western District of Pennsylvania court,
U.S. District Court? This is a federal trial court, so the decision doesn't have any precedent. It's not binding on other federal trial courts. It's certainly not binding on state courts or on appellate courts. And frankly, even within the Western District, within that court itself, the judge is careful to say, this is confined to the unique facts associated with this case. So it's not like this is a binding decision elsewhere. However, it could provide some persuasive logic that other judges might pick up on, and that's how the law starts to develop in new areas. Mm. And so we might be seeing that here. Maybe this is a one-off situation. Maybe not. It's certainly worth watching, and attorneys might start pushing this argument. So in our last remaining moment here, is there anything over there in on the European side of the pond that you want to report on this week, Jonathan?
It's been a busy week. Maybe one of the things that we'll return to in the next week, a lot of activity around data security. So maybe that's something we'll talk about next week. Some intriguing stuff from the UK military. They've started giving their soldiers advice on Twitter use. So maybe we'll touch on that briefly next week. I think you're right. We've probably exhausted e-discovery or exhausted this new case. We like to stick to 10 minutes. Thank you for listening. Do suggest topics. You can find us on the Duane Morris website. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. So I've been Jonathan Armstrong. My email address is jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. And Eric?
And I've been and I still remain Eric Finrod at ejfinrod@duanemorris.com. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we will chat at you next time.
Take care. Bye.